Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
It is time for Ask the Doctors. We have two medical professionals here to answer your coronavirus and vaccination questions. The number to call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now, Dr. Cassandra Pierre is acting hospital epidemiologist and an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center. She's also on the faculty at Boston University. Also, Dr. Philip Landrigan, an epidemiologist and pediatrician and director of the Boston College's program in Global Public Health. Doctors Pierre and Landrigan, welcome.
Great to be here.
A pleasure to be here, Tatiana.
Great to have you both. So much to ask, and I know we've got callers who will want to ask questions too. The governor got his first vaccination today at the Heinz Convention Center, first dose earlier this afternoon. He was included in the latest round of eligibility that opened up yesterday, added people over 55 and people over 16 with one health condition. How important is it, Dr. Pierre, for public figures to get the vaccine, to be shown getting it at this stage in our rollout?
I think it's still very important. As every stage of rollout progresses, there will be more people who may have counted on waiting a little bit more time to make their decisions about getting the vaccine. The more people they see fit into the brackets of eligibility who may look like them or have similar age or risk conditions, the better. I know that the governor did make a point to say that he was feeling well. I was glad that he was steady and strong during the conference, basically exhibiting like he's doing well. He got the shot. He's doing well. I really don't think that we can do enough of these. The more that we do this, the more we saturate the airwaves, the more people see people that look like them who are getting these vaccines and are doing well. And that increases acceptance.
Dr. Landrigan, we're still in a race against supply, if you will. We have, the state says probably a million more people eligible to be vaccinated as of yesterday. We're hearing some thoughts that given the loosening of restrictions, it may be more than that. We're not there yet on supply. We do know that the federal government and the state government hope we will reach equilibrium. In the meantime, will it scare some people off or suppress some people's willingness to get a vaccine if they try and they can't anytime soon?
Well, I think we're really in a race between the epidemic and getting the vaccine into people's arms. And it's just so incredibly important that everyone who is now eligible gets vaccinated, because every day that a person waits is a day that they're uncovered, and a day when they can catch this terrible disease and then be at risk for passing it on to other people. So I think that the idea that public figures should be vaccinated, sports stars, people that look like people in communities, to break down the barriers, because there's, on the one hand, people are worried about the unknown, which is the fear of the vaccine, which is really extremely safe. And on the other hand, we've got this terrible, terrible disease that kills people and leaves them disabled for months. And it's just very important that everyone in the community speak with the voice of clear reason and cut through the confusion and the misinformation that's being put out.
1-800-423-8255 to ask your coronavirus questions. Dr. Pierre, I'm going to come back to you, and I'm going to delve into an uncomfortable subject. There were new eligibility criteria released over the weekend that made more people qualify for the vaccine. If you are or have been a smoker, if you have a body mass index over a certain level and are considered either overweight or obese, a number of other factors. There has been chatter in social media that what's happening is people who haven't cared as well for their bodies, for example, smokers, are able to get vaccines and healthier people have to wait. On the flip side, the public health messaging is if you have a comorbidity that makes you more vulnerable to serious illness, that has always been our vaccination priority. This doesn't feel like a healthy conversation for us, but it's what's going on out there. How do we sort out the priorities and where we are right now? And what's your response to that tension?
Yeah, there is a lot of tension, also a lot of controversy, not just on the side of people who are saying, well, you know, I've taken care of myself and I'm not eligible. But there's also people who are obesity advocates and activists and who feel stigmatized and potentially marginalized by these new eligibility criteria. And this is a complicated conversation. I guess what I would say is we know that BMI is not necessarily the ultimate arbiter of health, but it is a useful indicator. We know that those who have been noted to be obese do have worse outcomes with COVID-19. The mere fact of being obese is not a personal choice in many circumstances, and in fact, probably most. We think about underserved communities, communities that have been systemically marginalized, who have had poor access to healthcare, healthy food, or safe spaces in which they can exercise. There's so many factors that add up to obesity that may be, and certain circumstances are definitely beyond personal control. So in terms of anti-obesity bias, we need to move beyond that. The people who are at higher risk need to get vaccinated because they are at higher risk for severe complications of COVID and death. And yes, we want everyone, as Dr. Landergren mentioned, to get vaccinated as soon as possible. This is a race against time, locally, nationally, and globally. But the prioritization has been put into place to protect those who have higher risk of either severe outcomes of COVID or higher risk of exposure. And so we really need to put that aside and start focusing on trying to get people as vaccinated as quickly as possible, regardless of the indication for their vaccination.
Let's grab a call here quickly. Joan in Cambridge. Joan, what's your question?
Good afternoon. My question is this. I have had both of my vaccines. I've waited the 2 weeks after the second. And I'm going to celebrate the birthday of a friend of mine who is 95 years old, and she is living in a very secure senior residency. I've just had a COVID test just to make sure that I don't infect her. And my question is this really necessary? She has also had her both of her vaccines some time ago. She's, as I say, 95. We'll be
Joan,
95.
Is what necessary? Is masking necessary? Is that what you're asking?
No. I, having gone through all of my vaccines, and she's gone through all her vaccines, the question is it really necessary? I've just lined up to take a COVID test to make sure that I don't infect her. But is that really necessary?
I mean,
is it possible that I can infect her?
Thank you, Joan. Dr. Landergren.
I would say it's a situation of belt and suspenders. You're really going all the way in terms of being cautious. And I think that's appropriate in dealing with somebody who's 95 years old. In reality, what's the likelihood that you're going to spread it to her? Minuscule. But she's a dear friend. She's very old. Why not go the extra step as you have?
Thanks, Dr. Landergren. Let's get one more question here. Paul in Marshfield. Paul, briefly, what's your question?
How effective, thanks so much, Doctor. How effective is the J&J when they say it's like 72% effective? Like, what does that mean? And should I wait for a Moderna or just get it because I can get it tomorrow?
Thanks, Paul, and glad to hear you've got the opportunity. Dr. Pierre.
Paul, kudos on the opportunity. That is very confusing in terms of what we hear when we talk about effectiveness against any infection. That 72% is an indication of how effective the J&J has been in the United States in preventing any symptomatic COVID disease. But what we've actually been looking at, what we think is actually most important, is the fact that J&J, Moderna, and Pfizer all protect us 100% against the severe forms of COVID, so hospitalization and death. The other thing that's important to know is that 72% was not compared to Moderna or Pfizer and Pfizer in head-to-head studies, and so we actually don't know what the relative efficacy of that vaccine is. In fact, we think it's probably a little bit higher in the real-world situation. But the bottom line is that it is very important. It will protect you. It will reduce your risk of symptomatic infection and potentially eliminate your risk of severe disease or hospitalization. As our numbers are rising in the state, I do recommend that people take the first approved vaccine that is made available to them.
And Dr. Landergren, we have very limited time left, but as a pediatrician, I want to ask you, where does the research stand on the potential efficacy and safety of the vaccines for children under 16?
Well, we now know that the vaccine is safe and highly effective for adolescents. And I think we'll have a very clear statement on safety for young children very shortly. But my presupposition is that it will be very safe for children. To be sure, most children who get COVID do pretty well with it, but there's a small subset who don't do well, and therefore protecting children will be very, very important.
And Dr. Pierre, in a sentence, how concerned should we be about the variants right now?
Well, middlingly, we know, they are something that is on the horizon. The vaccine should protect us from most of those variants, especially the quicker we get our population vaccinated. And so this is something that will be less of a concern the more of us are vaccinated.
That is Dr. Cassandra Pierre, acting hospital epidemiologist and infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center, and Dr. Philip Landrigan, an epidemiologist and pediatrician and director of the Boston College Program on Global Public Health. Thanks so much to you both. Really appreciate the time today.
You're welcome.